Ja, Muhalifat Erdoğan'ın General KGC. Then from Home Affairs, I've got the DG of Home Affairs, Mr. Aplin. Then we've got Mudir Medios, who is the Chief Director of Home Affairs. And then we've got Stephen Simri, the Parliamentary Officer. And then we've got Riyaz Musa, the Deputy Director. And of course, I know there is someone you all have seen him. And also I also come at one time. Yes, yeah, he's here as well. And I'm not informed on officials from small business, those that may be around here. And if I can just get the information to be able to speak to. And then from the Committee on Home Affairs, we have received an apology from Honorable Nancy. And of course also the Secretary has received an apology from Ms. Mabija. The other apologies we have not received from other committees, of course, is that we did not expect that all members of other committees may pitch up because of other engagements that are on in Parliament. We do expect that there is some representation from other committees that would do us good. And then, honourable members, again, I want to indicate that we expected the presentations to come from Home Affairs and then also from Small Business and the Police. And we have received an apology letter from the Minister of Home Affairs. He is participating in the Interministerial Committee on the PICC to start for the engagement in Pretoria today. And of course, but we are not deprived of the presentation from Home Affairs. We have got the Deputy Minister who is here on his behalf. And then we have got the Minister of Small Business who has been invited as well to be here. And then the Minister of Police is not going to be with us. I'm told and I understand that he's overseas, but then he has deployed officials to assist us with the information that is required. And of course, that looks like we have got a joint report of Home Affairs and the police on the matters that are on the ground in relation to the subject that we are busy with today. And on that, maybe I should just simply indicate the members of other committees that are here. Then we've got Honorable Mulivasi here. Then we've got from the Portfolio Committee on Police. Then we've got Honorable Chukma, the Chair of the Portfolio Committee on Police. Then we have got Honorable Beltenbach, from Justice, Portfolio Committee of Justice. Then we have got Werner Horn. I hope that I pronounced the surname correctly, but it's also from Justice. Then, of course, I've already indicated with Honorable Bengu, from the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Small Business Development. Those are the members that we have currently. And honorable members, I think on that particular score, then we can really get to the business of today. You realize that the program that is in front of you, we expected to start with the presentation from Home Affairs, and then we are supposed to have time for discussions, and then after that it's small business, and then the police side at the end. But now I've been informed officially that there is a joint presentation for Home Affairs and the police, and then we will definitely start with that one. Thanks on that brief, and then you are all welcome, and also the members from the media, you are welcome and to be with us here. Right through, I don't think there will be any time where you will not be welcomed. We will never have a closed session. Then we start open until right up to the end, and so that you are able to capture what will be happening today here. And on that score, honorable members, I would then request the Deputy Minister of Home Affairs to actually give us the lead. Thank you very much, Deputy Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to you and all of the honorable members present here today. As you have indicated, Chairperson, our minister is unavoidably unable to be here. However, I think you mentioned the incorrect committee which he is attending. You would recall last week, led by the President, there were two meetings with stakeholders. The first were business and civic associations, and the second was a meeting led by the President with the leaders of the immigrant communities in South Africa. Arising out of these meetings, an interministerial committee on migration has been established, and the minister is attending that meeting. There were several issues arising out of those meetings that the Interministerial Committee had to deal with, hence the minister's absence and apology here today. As you further pointed out, Chairperson, we do have a joint presentation which will be led by Major General Anandan, and the Home Affairs aspect of it will be dealt with during the presentation by Chief Director Matthews. So without any further ado, I think we can proceed to the presentation. We stand ready to deal with any questions arising and any comments from the committees present today. Thank you very much. May I then hand over to Major General Anandan.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Good morning, Honourable Chairperson and honourable members of the committee. As I was introduced, I'm Major General Charles Annandale. I am the Head of Specialized Operations within the Division Operational Response Services within South African Police Service. And on the 16th of April, I was appointed as the chairperson of a priority committee comprising of many departments, close to 20 departments, where we are addressing the specific attacks on foreign nationals. It is our view that a collective presentation on behalf of the NAD joints will provide a better overview to this committee. The scope of my presentation, Chairperson, will be to provide an overview of recent developments, spell out the underlying or the causes of the incidents, will examine the response of government departments to date, and provide an action plan to guide future mitigation. Chairperson, honorable members, as we all know, the attacks against foreign nationals in provinces and recent attacks have been in Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal. The attacks have mainly been directed against foreign nationals and their specific sponsor shops. The recent spate of attacks was sparked by a labor dispute over the employment of foreign nationals at the Kwajina store in Isisindu in KwaZulu-Natal. There were certain sections of Mlazi that have been particularly affected, with attacks at the time that mainly took place during the night. In the initial phases, early in April, only looting of the properties took place, but then recently situations have become more violent by perpetrators resorting to petrol bombing. I must just say that for the past 10 days, we've had very few and isolated incidents relating to attacks on foreign nationals. It started in KwaZulu-Natal, I believe on the 30th of March, and then it spilled over to Gauteng around the 14th of April. There are limited incidents in the rest of the country, limited to, apart from the two provinces mentioned, to the northwest, Western Cape and Mpumalanga. In terms of underlying causes, competition over access to resources, the rivalry for employment opportunities, business rivalry between foreigners and South Africans and with immigrant groups, failure to regulate the registration of business at local government level, the involvement of immigrant communities in criminal activity, inter alia drug trafficking and trading in stolen goods, and incitement and the spreading of misinformation on social media platforms. In terms of the immediate government response, a range of government departments have responded to the attacks, to name a few: South African Police Service and National Defence Force, Department of Home Affairs, Department of Social Development, the Department of Health, Small Business Development, CERCO, Department Land Reform and Rural Development, COPCA, our National Disaster Management Centre, as well as the Provincial Disaster Management Centres. We have CERCO on board, we have the Intelligence Community, we have ESCOM, CRASA, CIRA, GCIS, and as I mentioned on the JOCO meeting that I chair, we have in the area of 20 departments that sit on a daily basis to address this threat. Mentioned that the NAT joints were activated, the PROF joints were activated initially in KwaZulu-Natal, then in Gauteng, and then we've activated all of them throughout the country. I mentioned the Bravo Committee that was established. We meet daily, chairperson, 7 days a week. We meet twice per day, 10 o'clock in the morning, and 17 hours again, where we get feedback and discussions, where we deal with incidents reported, where we respond to those incidents, and where we are proactive in terms of dealing with specific risks and threats that have been identified. We have joint operational centres that operate 24/7 at both national and provincial levels. We receive 2 hourly reports in the NAT job situated in Pretoria, where we get that from the respective provinces. We also have operational centres activated with effective police and justice, and then we immediately deployed additional law enforcement members to flashpoint areas, specifically focusing on KwaZulu-Natal and Gauteng. As we all know, shelters were established in the provinces of KZN and Gauteng. We have appointed dedicated investigation teams who work in close cooperation with the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, and also with the National Prosecuting Authority. Then the intelligence services have been tasked to investigate incidents and perpetrators to ensure intelligence-driven operations, and our intelligence coordinating committee that brief us twice daily, comprised of Crime Intelligence, NICOP, State Security Agency and Defence Intelligence. And then there was a government action plan that was agreed upon, the so-called 5-pillar action steps. And the action steps are reflected within all of these work streams. We have appointed chairpersons. These chairpersons will meet with those departments that play a specific role in these work streams, and they report them twice daily in terms of progress made. The very first, as you said, safety and security is led by the South African Police Service. Other departments involved, the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, National Prosecuting Authority, respective Metropolitan Police Departments, and the ICC, the Intelligence Community. Then in terms of the second work stream, humanitarian services, led and chaired by Social Development, also with the Department of Health on board, National Disaster Management Center, COPTRA, and then the SABS is playing a specific role within that work stream. The third action step is legal and regulatory framework led by the Department of Home Affairs and also with SAPS involved. The fourth one, communication, community outreach and mobilization led by government communications. COPTRA is on board, Department of Social Development and the SA Police Service. And our first work stream, international cooperation, which is chaired by and led by DERCO, with State Security Agency and Defense Intelligence on board. Chairperson, the action steps will be reflected per work stream. And I can just mention that in slides to follow, I can choose just some of the slides that we get presented in the JOCO meeting on a daily basis, not all the slides. So the chairperson will then report back on those action steps as highlighted and give a comprehensive report based on that, then we will give taskings. So I've just included some of the slides of yesterday, to give an indication in terms of the typical feedback that we get and the typical discussion that follows. In terms of the safety and security work stream, scene number one would be the daily deployments of hotspots. We have all police stations deploying personnel, but then specifically in the provinces where certain hotspots have been identified through analysis of risks and threats by the ICC and then based on the occurrence of incidents. Also increase of deployment to enhance visibility and response to incidents. Those are additional deployments that we coordinated from a national level, but also in terms of the deployment of resources from other provinces in assistance. The third one, intelligence ground coverage, by deploying more intelligence operatives. In terms of pre-warning, I mentioned that we get pre-warning in our discussion from the intelligence community. We then do proactive deployments. We assist, they also assist the detectives in terms of the investigation on criminal acts, as well as in cases of intimidation. Fourth being the integrated criminal case management and criminal justice system to enhance swift justice. The establishment of special courts, dedicated prosecutors, and then the guidance of the National Prosecuting Authority to investigating officers. Number five being the establishment of liaison forums and cooperation centers for migrants in conjunction with the existing community policing forums. I can just mention these are existing forums, but the focus is directed at then obviously the issues at hand. Six action steps within that work stream, the enforcement of bylaws relating to trade, health and other compliance issues. Seven, the support in the reintegration program of government. And then eight, the assessment and management of illegal firearms in the hands of migrants. As I've mentioned, the next slide that followed would focus typically, number one being the daily deployments of hotspots. This is a slide, as was the case yesterday, the 27th at 6 o'clock. So you'll see that we indicate past 24-hour report in terms of the two shifts, 6 to 6. So it's 6 o'clock in the morning till 18 hours, and then again from 18 hours to 06 the following morning. And typically the hotspots identified with our thing as reflected there. Then you'll see the specific deployment, collective deployment in those hotspots during the day, and in terms of the night deployment, comprising then of mostly police, but also assisted by Metropolitan Police from time to time, the National Defence Force, if there are specific operations where they will assist us with the coordinate search, and then the specific activities that have been performed. So you'll see that it reflects the number of dedicated operations, the patrols performed, the roadblocks, premises search, vehicles, personal search, stop and search activities, vehicle checkpoints, and then the tracing of wanted suspects within that specific area. In this example, I've just extracted one from Gauteng. Also in terms of the next slide, same exercise of KwaZulu-Natal. Again, the hotspots as identified, and then the deployment and the specific crime combating activities performed within the area. we go to the second action step, the next slide please, and the next one, just one back, apologies. You'll see that also increased deployment to enhance visibility and response to incidents so that we can be in a better position to respond whenever there's any incident. So these incidents are not necessarily all related to attacks on foreign nationals. It will be any incident in within the area that calls for police attention. Again, we reflect the hotspots and then personnel, mostly from the public order policing, that will then respond to those specific incidents within the identified hotspots. An example in terms of the action set 3, the intelligence ground coverage by deploying more intelligence operatives. As I've mentioned earlier, Chairperson and honorable members, the ICC, comprising of National Intelligence Coordinating Committee, South African Police Service Crime Intelligence, the South African National Defence Force Defence Intelligence and State Security Agency, they have deployed intelligence support at within the specific provinces to prioritize the selection on the attack against foreign nationals and their businesses. And you will see this was the situation yesterday in terms of dedicated deployment within the provinces. We go to the action step 4, integrated criminal case management and criminal justice system to enhance justice. A reflection is the extraction on KwaZulu-Natal. You will see the dedicated courtrooms, dedicated prosecutors, magistrates, and the appointment of foreign language interpreters as reflected there, and the cases generated, raised cases to court will be then for the 24 hours. Obviously yesterday was a public holiday, so the preceding 24 hours would not reflect any of the cases to court, and there were no specific arrests made in that 24 hour period for KwaZulu-Natal. You go to action step 5, the establishment of liaison forums and cooperation centers for migrants in conjunction with the community policing forum. Again, the feedback as it stood yesterday. Extraction of Gauteng, typically in Compton Road. In Kosong, there was a business forum meeting. Johannesburg Central and the Boysons areas, there was a round table meeting chaired by the station commander of Boysons, where they have met Nigerian Malawi pastors regarding specific threats or attacks on migrants. And then in Ekurhuleni Metropolitan Municipality meeting that is planned to take place. So this is typically the feedback that we get from all over the country in terms of these initiatives. If we go to the next slide, I've indicated that it's not only limited to the provinces of Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal. Here, typically in Free State, in Mangaung Metropolitan Municipality, and also in Guate Local Municipality, a number of specific programs and interactions and meetings that took place in the respective areas as reflected on the slide. If we go to number 6, the enforcement of bylaws relating to trade, health and other compliance issues. This would be mostly our metropolitan police and local law enforcement agencies. You'll see the focus is on the hotspots as earlier reflected in terms of deployment and activities, but also we address then heritage sites and land invasions in terms of proactive deployments as reflected, for example, there in terms of Gauteng, the Western Cape and KwaZulu-Natal. The seventh action step, support the reintegration program of government. Here we reflected the Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal shelters. So these would typically reflect the shelter deployment by the law enforcement agencies to ensure the safety and security at the shelters, but also in hotspot areas, so that we can ensure a conducive environment for the reintegration of those displaced migrants to the communities. And it would reflect the typical deployment of public order policing, visible policing members, the metropolitan police, medical response service, disaster management, and so on in the shelters in Primrose, Isipingo, Phoenix, and Chatsworth. Chairperson, the next slide is just a sample of a consolidation of police combating operations for a period. That's just a period from the 16th to the 23rd of April. And it will give them the consolidated activities per date in terms of the patrols on the roadblocks and the premises search to give you indication in terms of the activities being performed, and this is exclusively in terms of police activities performed as well as in the number of wanted suspects that were traced and arrested, figures as reflected on the slide. If we then go to action step 2, the humanitarian services, they have 4 actions: food and infrastructure to displaced people, provision of temporary accommodation and shelter, the integration into communities, and the provision of psychosocial services. I've mentioned that the Department of Social Development lead this cluster, and they are specifically supported by the Department of Health. Again, statistics as reflected on the 27th of April. They had 65 social workers deployed to 3 temporary shelters. Isipingo, there were 948 persons in the shelter. Chatsworth, 2,887, and Phoenix, 574. Obviously, this is just reflecting the social workers, but I've mentioned on the earlier slide in terms of the other departments involved and active at the shelters. If we go to the first action step, ensuring food and infrastructure to displaced people, they will then typically give feedback in terms of the support they get, the donations they get from NGOs in terms of food, what is in place, the distribution of dignity packs, for instance, the Department of Health in terms of the management of the food quality, waste management, sanitation inspections, and communicable disease management. They will indicate the availability of SASA to be on standby should intervention be required in terms of resources that they need. And then there's a health operations toll-free number that we then advertise, and they will give feedback in terms of those calls that they've received, also in terms of the toll-free number through the Department of Social Development. If we go to the integrations to communities, again, an example, they will reflect then the activities in KwaZulu-Natal and Gauteng. They will have the support in terms of the Department of Home Affairs in terms of this integration, and then they will give feedback in terms of the assessments that the workers have done, the willingness of people to be reintegrated, those individuals that opt voluntarily to be repatriated back to their countries of origin, and then we will get an ICC report, Jefferson, in terms of typically what the climate would be within the communities for the reintegration of the displaced individuals. And then the psychosocial support status on the 27th of April. I've mentioned the toll-free number. They will then reflect the specific calls that they received, the nature of the calls and how it was directed. They will then indicate the counseling support that they have been rendered to the displaced people in terms of trauma services, and then the support to those families that have opted to return home. Typically they will give us a feedback on the funeral arrangements, in this case the arrangement of Mr. Emmanuel Sotole, and then they will indicate those departments and entities involved in the process, the dates. We will discuss then the policing that would be in place and any further support that might be required in terms of repatriation of the mortal remains and so forth. Then the emergency medical services, mentioned that the provincial EMS of Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal were tasked to ensure that the necessary emergency medical services was immediately available at all temporary shelters, and also they respond to incidents outside of the shelters, not only limited to the confines of the shelters. You'll see the status in terms of their response as of the 26th of April reflect 234 incidents that they've responded to. The table indicates the response within KwaZulu-Natal as well as Gauteng. You will see the cases of assault, medical, and then a breakdown in terms of the gender. So 234 cases that they responded to. Then the primary health care, which is mostly related to chronic medication and non-life-threatening illnesses, in terms of the assistance that they provided for the people, then did not have to go to the to the state hospitals, and then the numbers that they've dealt with in total, 902, a breakdown in terms of the three shelters in the KwaZulu-Natal area, 142 in East Pingo, 79 Chatsworth, and 681 in Phoenix. Other aspects that the Department of Health deals with in the next slide. I've mentioned the food control, food integrity test and inspections. They deal with waste management, plans in place for the general waste removal, human waste removal, refuse bins and bin liners. They deal with water and sanitation services in terms of constructed water runoffs, chemical toilets, daily services of that, and then the portable showers. They have the communicable disease response teams, and they are doing daily inspections and daily surveillance to prevent the outbreak of diseases. Forensic pathology services within the department were tasked to ensure that there is liaison with relevant services should there be any request in terms of the repatriation of deceased to the country of origin. And then health promotion, they also did that at the specific shelters in terms of areas of personal hygiene, hand washing, personal care, caring of infants, and then proactive action to assist in the prevention of cross-infection. That deals with the first two action steps, and Chairperson, with your permission, if I can then hand over to Mr. Matthews, that will deal with the legal and regulatory framework.
Thank you, Chairperson, Honourable Minister, Deputy Minister, Honourable Members. Home Affairs is responsible for Action Step 3 as part of this process, which is the legal and regulatory framework. The scope of our work is the re-registration and verification of displaced persons, also the reissuance of lost documents, also the effective implementation of immigration laws, as well as participating in joint operations, in particular relating to illegal migration. The next slide, we have in terms of the scope dealing with re-registration and verification, yesterday's activities on the 27th of April, we documented 219 Malawian males. This was at Phoenix, Chatsworth, and Isipingo. And they are awaiting buses to return them to Malawi. In Gauteng, there was also reintegration of foreign nationals. There was discussions relating to the integration of foreign nationals at Marathon, and this is due to be completed today and tomorrow. This is a task that is being done locally, where the city plus the local community and the foreign nationals are engaging in order for them to be returned to their community. The numbers we have, it's not reflected here, but there's 35 Mozambicans and 48 Zimbabwean nationals that are pending reintegration. In terms of reissuance of lost documents, the majority of the displaced persons who were undocumented claimed to have lost documents during the incidents. A number of them indicated they wanted to return. But on the next slide, we have the figures of persons who came forward and actually said they had their documents on them. And the figures we have are, we have one Ethiopian national, the refugee. Then we have Burundians that are either asylum seekers or refugees, 63 of them. Then we have DRC nationals that are at the number 221, either asylum seekers or holding refugee status. In terms of the other scope of this action step, we will be looking at effective implementation of immigration laws. So on a daily basis at the daily meetings, we present statistics on deportations over the last 12 to 24 hours. Yesterday there was no deportations, being a public holiday and a weekend. similar status applied in terms of joint operations. There were no joint operations in the 24 hours previous to yesterday, as well as convictions for illegal migration. There's no information. And also on the effective tracing and monitoring of foreign nationals, there was no information as well. The next slide talks to the number of people that were documented for repatriation back to their home countries. The majority of the repatriated persons are Malawian nationals. At the second to last column on the right of the screen, you'll see that the numbers that we've repatriated on it and the dates are reflected on these tables. So the Malawians in total, as we've indicated, 913 have been repatriated. We've also given a breakdown in terms of males, females and children. We then have the Mozambican nationals at 637 in total, Tanzanian nationals 17, and Zimbabwean nationals, the Zimbabwean nationals. The reason I mentioned the Malawians, there's a group to be repatriated today and tomorrow. But in total, these national groupings, it's 2,665 from KZN. From the displaced shelters in Gauteng, the number that have been repatriated are 102. So in total, the voluntary repatriations are 2,767 that have taken place in the last few weeks since the outbreak of the incident. On the next slide, we are giving a breakdown of the picture relating to people that are legally in the country, the statistics of people that have acquired legal status in South Africa between 2010 and 2015. The first column talks to work permit holders. We've issued 434,650 work permits, refugee status for 104,332 persons, and those awaiting decision on their refugee application, the asylum seekers, 273,563. And then we've issued permanent resident status to 77,398. So according to our systems, then, the total number of persons legalized since between 2010 and 2015 is 889,943. In the bottom row, we then have figures of persons that have overstayed in the country. These would be the persons that would be, the department would be seeking to trace because they've not applied for a change of status or they've not departed the country. They're merely, according to our systems, they're people that are now illegal in the country. And the number we have is 333,874. At the daily meetings, we also provide information on the traveler movement of the affected foreign nationals to give an indication of whether we've seen increases or decreases in terms of the legalized travelers from these affected nationals into the country. In terms of March, the figures in March, the Ethiopians that came in and also exited, we had a total of 619. From the 1st to the 21st of April, we've had 353. Now, this table doesn't reflect the remainder of April, so the figure could increase if we were to give the figure from the 1st of April to 31st of April to 30th of April. So the picture may change because we're only talking 1st to 21st of April. But Malawian nationals, in March, we had a figure of 5,095. So far in April, we've had 3,253, either exiting, or it's a combination of arrivals and departures. Mozambicans that came in or exited in March, it was 12,352. So far in April, it's 8,573. The Tanzanian nationals, March figures are 2,414, and April's up to the 21st of April is 1,522. The Zimbabwean nationals, legalized movement was 19,735 in March. So far in April, it's been 13,372. So our, in total, the traveler movement shows a slight decrease in April of 27,083. However, that may change if we were to provide the remainder of the April figures, which we have, which this report doesn't reflect currently. Chairperson, that's my report. I hand over your permission back to General Annandale.
Who's taking us on the last portion? Continue.
Chairperson, I will continue with your blessing. The action step 4 deals with the communication, community outreach and mobilization. It's being led by the Department of Communications. It deals with the 6 action steps as reflected, the briefing of councillors, community engagement, mass communication and messaging, visits and deployments to shelters, marches against attacks on foreign nationals and discussions with Amakhosi and traditional leaders. Again, as an example, the typical action would be the briefing of councillors. The status would be that the office of the respective premiers and the role players within the provinces would deal with that. And in this case, the Prime Ministry mobilized all provincial MECs, mayors and speakers to work with community-based formations towards peace and stability. And then a typical further example, the address by Councillor Mrs. Zungu against attacks on foreign nationals at Dumisane Makanye School in Belvedere area in Chatsworth. And then another action would be community engagement to involve churches, NGOs, political parties, traditional organizations, community-based structures, amongst others. And then we give a reflection and a discussion on the engagement the past 24 hours and also those expected the next 24 hours. And then some remarks, COP has launched the Back to Basics program aimed at building a caring South African society that is tolerant towards foreign nationals. Addressed by the Deputy Minister of Communications, Mrs. Stella Ndabeni Abrams at Mzamshlole informal settlement in East London. Then the people that attended the church service that was held in Swanee Event Center by Bishop Zondo, a prayer meeting on attacks against foreign nationals, the Mayfair shelter where there was addressed by the Minister of Foreign Affairs, Mr. Georgie Ponder from Malawi. And then the Minister of Defence had the event in East London on the 25th of April. I can just mention, Chairperson and honourable members, that there are so many marches and so many engagements and so many embezzles where people are joining and taking hands and saying no in their communities on these attacks against foreigners. If we have to go and consolidate that, it will be pages upon pages every single day where we get the feedback all over the country. There's this outcry and people joining hands against this attacks on foreigners in our country. You'll see that if we go to the second page on that, you'll see that the meeting, the NEC of Transport met with taxi owners in Mpumalanga, the Minister of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, having an outreach program at ZZ2 in Limpopo on coexistence between farm workers, and so we can carry on. Then in terms of our communication services, also on board would be the SAS corporate communication, certain key messages that we continue conveying through the communication messengers in government departments. And then as we speak, there's a media briefing by the Interministerial Committee that is taking place today on the latest developments and an overview. The Chairperson, the regular visits and deployments to the shelters. I've mentioned the deployment of social services and many other departments at the shelters, the preparedness of disaster management centres, and then the visits would not only be the social development, but we will have from ministers and MECs and deputy ministers, and we have officers from the disaster management, the police, from our provincial offices, and then also from the provincial disaster management centers, Department of Health, and all over that is reflecting visits. So typically in the 24-hour reporting period, there were visits to Phoenix, to Chatsworth, to Del Park in Pietermaritzburg, and then in Ellsberg and Primrose, that was reflected. And then March Against Attack on Foreign Nationals, as I've mentioned, then we will analyze all of the marches that took place and also look in terms of the preview of the next 24 hours so that we can also make sure that from a policing perspective we have our particular policing members in place for the marches to follow. And then the discussion with the Amakhosi local houses, the responsible department COPTA, and in this case Deputy Minister Papele addressed the gathering at the opening of the Bakhatla Bakhafela Museum in Northwest on the 24th, and we will reflect on all of those activities. Chairperson, the last action step on international cooperation, there's five activities: the engagement with African foreign missions, engagement of foreign ministries by SA heads of missions, activation of the joint emergency evacuation contingency, monitoring of the effect of the current situation on SA citizens and businesses abroad, and feedback from SA missions. I've consolidated their feedback instead of going to individual slides in just one slide that just give an overview in terms of activities that's taken place. And as we know, DERPA is mandated to deal with matters of international relations and cooperation, and they are currently attending to the following. Minister Kwana Mashabane briefed all African missions on the 17th of April with Minister D. Mashlobo and Minister Gigaba, respectively from State Security and Home Affairs. Engagement with foreign missions South Africa on an ongoing basis regarding concerns and queries from missions and issues relating to the repatriation of their nationals. The engagement of foreign ministries by SA heads of missions abroad and obtaining feedback from SA missions. In this regard, an aid memoir was sent to all SA missions on the continent on the 17th of April with a specific directive that the heads of mission meet with the host foreign ministries to brief them about the South African government steps. The heads of missions have been advised to engage with local media, intelligentsia, as well as civil society to communicate the same message, and also directed to keep close contact with SA businesses and nationals living in their host countries. The same aid memoir was sent to all other SA missions on other continents on the 20th of April. SA missions are providing feedback on an ongoing basis about the integration with foreign states, demonstrations against some of the SA missions, and the receiving of petitions from interested groupings, and the monitoring of the effect of the current situation on SA citizens and SA businesses abroad. In this regard, the SA missions have reported on actions that have had an impact on SA citizens and SA businesses. Then to finish off, Honourable Chairperson and members, it was mentioned by the Deputy Minister that there's an IMC that will deal with migration, and it's not my intention to go and comment on that, but I can just mention what we have done as the NAT joins in terms of intensive crime combat and prevention operations in all provinces targeted at the hotspot areas that we've reflected. Now, every day we get feedback from the ICC in terms of the hotspots. Then we target those hotspots in terms of multidisciplinary and integrated operations with the idea that they should not remain in terms of the first or second priority, because then something that we are doing is not right. So that is the idea. We will then focus on that, and then every province, every prof joint is expected to do two operations per week. So that will give us a minimum of 18 operations involving all of the departments that I've mentioned. Specifically, the Department of Home Affairs is on board with us, the Department of Health is on board with us, the National Defence Force is assisting us, and then the various police departments or units within the police. And the operations focus on the pillars as reflected: illicit drug trafficking and contraband, undocumented migrants, human trafficking and prostitution, hijacking and illegal occupation of buildings, illegal arms and ammunition, defacing of historical statues and symbols, unlicensed businesses, the management of RDP houses, and the illegal occupation of land. So we have done a number of those. We've already had operations in Alexandra, in Hillbrow, Johannesburg Central area. We've had them in Pretoria Central, in Sunnyside. We've had them in Mayfair, and then also in the Western Cape operations that's already taken place. And we've had a number of successes in this regard, and we will continue with that. Provisional scope is till the end of August in terms of this specific focused operations that we do with a number of departments on board. Chairperson, I thank you for the opportunity.
I think we'll go back to the Deputy Minister. Honorable Deputy Minister. Okay. Honorable members, we have received the presentation, and I want you to check among yourselves whether there are areas that you need much more clarity in terms of the report. I'm sure we all realize that the report that we have received is much more technical in nature of what is actually happening on the ground. The status quo and the operations that are being put down to actually mitigate against the problems that we are having on the ground. And I would really request that we raise those issues that we need much more clarity in terms of the action plans that have actually been put down to really execute this work. If we need much more clarity, can we do so? Honorable Kumele. Just a second, so, noting Honorable Kumele, Honorable Kenya, then Honorable Zain, Honorable, it looks like it's almost all of us. I'll just go by line. You can start, Honorable Kumele.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. And thank you very much for the input, General Anandi. Firstly, let me start by saying that I believe we all condemn the violence that has occurred in our country as South Africans. And secondly, it is clear that this violence has been perpetrated by a tiny minority of criminals that intend to benefit from the actions of the crime. And secondly, it is clear that they use the grievances of other people in order to commit these heinous crimes. And in the process, a lot has been happening, and we thank the team for a comprehensive response to these actions. However, in the presentation, we seem to be missing Somalians, Nigerians, Pakistanis, Bangladeshis in the whole scheme of things, whereas they have been part of the communities that had been affected. If perhaps the department the team could respond on that, because looking at your presentation, I did not see these communities, whereas on the ground they do exist. If I could get some explanation on that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can I get Honorable Hussein?
Chair, thank you very much. I agree with the sentiment that the vast majority of South Africans reject the recent violent attacks against foreigners. And I think that we've seen that happen. What we've seen happen has been rejected by millions of South Africans, as there are still a number of rallies that have been mentioned where people come openly out and speak out against xenophobia. So I completely agree with that sentiment. I have a few questions to ask you. The one thing that's not clear in this report, and I gather it will probably take quite a bit of effort, given that the operations are still continuing, is what is the total cost of this entire operation? There could be some figure put to it at some point, and I won't hold anyone to that figure. I take it that it would be some sort of an estimate. And I suspect that it will run into hundreds of millions of rands, because the reaction from the various departments have been pretty impressive, if I can call it that way. It must have cost millions of rands. The reason why I ask that question here is that in this document we talk about a number of root causes, which I don't believe are root causes actually. I think they are consequences. The root cause, Jefferson, is the fact that the Home Affairs Department has failed to make an investment in the Inspectorate Division. That is the division that is actually supposed to police illegal immigrants in the country. We have failed to control the influx of illegal foreigners into the country, and we have failed to control and manage the flow of illegal foreigners out of the country. So that is the root cause of the problem. And everything in this document that you talk about root causes are actually consequences of that failure by the Home Affairs Department. And if you go back to the time of Minister Naledi Pandor herself, who said that we need to make a greater investment in the Inspectorate Division. Since then, very little has been done. And as usual with our government chair, is that there's been a crisis reaction, and now we have 118 million rand investment in the Inspectorate Division. The same principle applied with ESCOM when the lights went off, then we're suffering an extra additional amount of money. Why can't we do these things before it happens? Surely we know that this problem was existing. We know that there were a number of illegal foreigners in the country. Unfortunately, the Home Affairs Department could never tell us what that figure was. I suspect it runs into millions, and the figures are looking closer to that. So, all of this money that we've spent, the millions of rands that we've spent on this very impressive plans, actually could have been invested properly in the Inspectorate Division, and we would have avoided this problem. And the small minority of criminals who have caused damage to our reputation internationally could have been avoided by government simply making right decisions of investment in the right places instead of crisis management and damage control, because that's what we're dealing with at the moment. Chair, I would still like to get an answer from the Home Affairs Department on what the estimate is with regards to illegal foreigners in the country. We've got some picture now of about 333,000 odd who have overstayed their visas. And that's from the period of 2010, over the last 5 years, there's 333,000 illegals. And the question is, what is Home Affairs doing over the last 5 years to get these 333,000 illegal people who we have documented out of the country? So we know that 300,000 people have overstayed, they're in the country, but we're not doing anything to get them out because we haven't made a sufficient investment in the inspectors. If you go to any other country, when you land in the country, they want to know where you're staying. Because if you don't go out when you're supposed to, they can't look for you. Here in South Africa, we wait for you to leave the country, and then we ban you from coming back. So if you stay here for another 5 years, and then decide to leave, then you'll be banned after the period when you leave. Okay, we have some indication about the number of immigrants that have applied for repatriation. I wonder if there's any indication of what figures, how many people have we figured out, has the department figured out, who have been affected by the xenophobic violence, but actually illegal foreigners. Because you see, Jefferson, if in any way in the world, when a government fails to implement its own laws, then the society will take the laws into their own hands. And that is what has happened in this situation. Because we failed to implement the immigration regulations and the Immigration Act, people take the law into their own hands because they have no confidence that government is implementing its own laws. That is what the cause of the problem was here. And we're going to get consequences over and over again This is not the first time it's happened. It happened in 2004, it's happened in 2008, it's happened in 2015, and it will continue to happen if we don't make a greater investment in the manner in which we control people into the country and out of the country. Chair, there's been a lot in the media recently about the comments that was made by the King and to what extent that has had an impact on the xenophobic violence. We had a response from our Minister of Home Affairs, who I believe then withdrew that comment. I'd like to hear from the Deputy Minister herself to what extent does she think that the comments made by the King have had an impact on the xenophobic violence. Chair, I'm done. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Nkomo.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I've got just a few questions which I am going to ask. I think firstly, I would just like to start off by the comments which were made by the Zulu King. King Gudul Zulitini was addressing a safety and security type of a matter, and he was distorted, Chairperson. He never said what the media actually stated. Last week on Monday, he had an Imbizo in KwaZulu-Natal. From Gauteng, I went to the Imbizo to go and listen to what he stated. And he has actually said, Human Rights Commission can go ahead and investigate the issues, but please just get his statement properly so that the matter is put to rest, because he has been misquoted. He actually stated matters in the way that he was encouraging people or the police or South Africa to look at challenges which we're faced with, and then he was distorted. So I just wanted to address that matter first of the King. Secondly, the issue of, I think there was the matter of the toll-free number, which I saw on page 22 of the input. And I noted that there were no calls received. And that is a problem to me, because when one looks at the toll-free numbers, and if that toll-free number has been well advertised, noting the type of challenges that we had, it would actually be getting quite a lot of input from the people. So I would like to urge the department and whosoever to actually ensure that communities are educated and they are informed about the toll-free numbers. The matter on page, especially on page 43, which is some of the issues which one takes note, the operational focus on the following pillars. I think there's about 9 of those areas. Yes, it's quite important for us to note these issues. And it is interesting that these issues are actually documented in the way they are documented, because they are definitely problematic to us as a country. But one would like to know, since 1994, or even before 1994, we started getting our brothers and sisters coming from other countries, coming to our country. And I noted yesterday that the president of the country, President Jacob Zuma, in his statement, he actually stated that, you know, we're getting all these people coming in. I just wonder why people keep coming in large numbers. He made a statement almost similar to that. But what he was stating was that because our borders are open, people are coming in large numbers, but that does not mean that we need not to focus on who is coming in, who is actually illegal in our country. The statistics which were given by Home Affairs, I think the statistics from March to April, you remember we were given some statistics, I think it's on page 32, if I'm not mistaken. Those statistics are statistics over just a few days. If one were to look for real statistics from the beginning of time when people started coming in, we would get millions. And that is a problem to us as a country, because we need to know who is legal and who is illegal in our country, especially over these overstays. One of my colleagues asked the issue of overstays. When one looks at again, page 43, and you look at the legal overstays, and you look at the illicit drug trafficking and contraband, those are the issues which are actually causing a lot of tension between the people on the ground. How long are we going to put a program or progress? Noting what I think the general, I'm sorry sir, if I'm not referring to you properly according to your credentials, but you actually spoke of people that are coming in and everything else, but then it's important for us to say, once we get illicit drug trafficking and contraband, and all those departments which you said you meet with, I think you said you have this collective that meets about twice a day or whenever you meet, how long will you be meeting? What are the long-term plans over those meetings? Because we should have learned from the 2004, 2008 and whenever coming up to now, what actually happened from there? Because it seems as if this is a knee-jerk reaction where we are reacting now. Because the situation is now, the issue is yes, we are reacting now, but what is going to happen in the future? So that we don't get to see such type of situations happening again in our country. All those issues are quite important to us. And of course the financial implications, yes, we will be deporting certain people, we will be repatriating certain people. But the report which came out of the media yesterday, I was reading some of the newspapers, where my colleagues asked, where are other races or where are other nationals when it comes to the reports, because we seem to have Somalians, Malawians and Mozambicans and Zimbabweans, and we seem to be giving out actually some of the big chunks. So it's important for us to get an understanding of that, or probably are we leaving out some of those countries because we're scared to actually touch them? Because if we seem to be not targeting them as well, especially the illegal immigrants, then it means that we will keep on getting these millions coming in, because our borders clearly are very porous. Any person can come in and out. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Levas.
Thank you very much, Chair. My first question to Major General. What is the lifespan of the committee you are heading? And my second one, to date, have you secured any convictions? And if you did, can you share with us some examples? My third one is, to what extent is there a linkage of these attacks to land invasion? My last one, we are not saying our people must be put in five-star hotels, but I've seen over the weekend where this Smolayana party was trying to make a political mileage out of the conditions of the camps. Have you as a head satisfied yourself to say the conditions are basic and you are satisfied? Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Bjorkman.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Honorable Members. Thank you for the initiative, and I must commend the Chairperson of Home Affairs of having the session with the departments. I think it's quite good that it's been held. Maybe just a question, a broader question, maybe to the Deputy Minister of Home Affairs, in terms of the question of migration, also of education. In terms of the presentation today, I think it's quite good. It's a status report. I also think the plans from the police side, I think, is good to deal with the current issues. But long term, how do we deal with the issue of migration? We saw the European Union last week crisis meetings by the ministers on the issues of migration. In the case of South Africa, it's also not just the question of the inspector unit not doing their job. It's a much more wide issue. So from a long-term perspective, how do we deal with that from a policy point of view, but also the question of education? I don't see the Department of Education in the rollout. I think it's critical. The civilian secretary of police is going to brief our committee tomorrow morning on what they're going to do from an education perspective involving the community police force. But how are we going to involve the Department of Education, ensuring that long-term our learners, our leaders of tomorrow, are also equipped with those long-term values that we can ensure that we deal with this thing holistically? Thank you.
Honorable Kane.
Thank you for the presentation. I think most of my questions have been asked, but also I want also to touch on the issue of challenging 2,000, because really that's a big number. Even if our borders are porous, that doesn't mean that it's such a big number. So maybe a question also to the Home Affairs. Do Home Affairs, or some Home Affairs aware of this big number of 23 overstayers? Because again, that makes it, that is an entitled country. If there are so many people, even though it means that even though we still say that we are going to establish border management control, but at the same time there must be control even before the border management agency is established. We can't have so many overstayers in the country. Secondly, my question is on the issue of underlying causes on page 4. Yes, you have listed the underlying causes, but my question is that, to my understanding, I thought there is also a stern task which was established by the President on the issue of xenophobia. I want to check if that information that you're talking about, the underlying causes, is that information a full information from the ministerial and also the Arts Committee? Or is just from the Parish Committee again, and also to check if you are working hand in hand with the ministerial task team. Also, on this page, you talk about the station commander having a round table with Nigeria and Malawi staff. What emerged from that meeting? You also contain that in those underlying causes, because you also want to know what is happening and what are the findings on this whole issue. That's why I just want to check if that is a consultation report of all the piece. On page 19 and 21, sorry. How many migrants in total have applied for voluntary repatriation so far since the recent incident? I think the Home Affairs is going to answer us from there, because really, now that's what to check if people really are volunteering to go back. The foreign nationals are really keen to go back home. Or also that we establish how many are keen to stay here and how many are prepared to go back home. I think some of my questions have been taken. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mayaka.
Thank you, Chairperson. My comment is just around the porous borders. You say that our borders are porous. It will be good for us to be really giving clear indication as to what are we doing to ensure that we don't have people coming into South Africa illegally. Because that's the cause of the problem. To have too many people, some not even registered officially, coming into the country. And of course then it extends to other problems. Because as a country you will have resources and the pie is just as little. And then people start fighting for resources. Obviously in South Africa we have a challenge of poverty and employment and inequalities. And now when you look at the fact that South Africans themselves are actually struggling with unemployment, but you hear stories of companies that just dismiss South Africans and bring in illegal immigrants. Those are some of the things that really say to us as a country, we really have a serious problem. And then it goes to housing. There's also a competition when it comes to allocation of houses. And when in general, the whole issue of immigration and many couples with illegal immigration actually overloads the system of South Africa, because then it goes into schools, into health systems. You find that everything is getting overloaded. But at the end of the day, as long as we don't have proper border management and control, the problem with this is we're talking about repatriation. And repatriation is not only going to begin now, it has happened before. And it elicits positive results, because we also saw people being moved out and then they come back. How are we going to make it sustainable to ensure that once you are saying to us, you give us a report and you say 2,000 have been repatriated, you're not going to find them 3 months down the line coming back to South Africa. And also in terms of communication strategy generally, are you talking about the prayer meeting, maybe 4,000 people? I think you need to look at something that is broader. Because at the end of the day, what is important, especially when it comes to issues of xenophobia, because people need to feel safe in South Africa in terms of the precincts of our own constitution. For now, it's good to have one prayer meeting of 1,000 people, but can't we have a broader strategy of talking to churches? So that, you know, we have our own churches being platforms for promotion of peace messages. If we can have just one voice, many messages. And I think for now what is also important is ourselves as South Africans in terms of how we interpret this whole issue of xenophobia. Sometimes we talk differently as South Africans. You get media houses, some of the media houses, in a manner in which they relate to this. If you look at the issue, for example, of Ukraine, you feel like instead of us looking at what is the problem, you end up contradicting each other and distorting messages of each other, and that is not really helpful. At the end of the day, you need to acknowledge the South Africans that we have a problem. The problem is illegal immigration, and the fact that we have been swamped with too many people, and there's no country in the world that can actually be in the procedure to have its doors open for everybody to come in. And now that is actually creating confusion, because people are starting to fight for resources. How do we deal with this without making each other feel guilty? This morning I was listening to a program on TV, there's an NGO that has been established, and it says, we decided to establish an NGO because the government is white. We hear no voice from the government. But the government is saying something. So the point I'm actually making is that South Africans need to start talking in a way that says we are together. And together we want to actually come up with something that's going to help us to deal with this xenophobia. So that at the end of the day we can be in the position to deal with xenophobia. But of course there are a number of other factors that need to actually be looked at that should actually manage to help us to have lasting and sustainable solutions. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mnisi.
Thank you so much, Jefferson, and thank you for the presentation. It's an eye-opener to all of us here. My first question, Chair, has been asked by Honorable Kenny, but I just want to add something. In the report on page 21, it clearly stated that some of the people assessed are not willing to be reintegrated. Instead, they wanted to go back to their countries of origin. Just want to check how many migrants have applied for offers of voluntary repatriation since this outbreak. If maybe Chair, they can also include the Pakistanian, Nigerian, and Somalis, which are not included in this report. Then, Chair, I just want to check what, if any, have been the initial findings relating to SAPS by the inter-ministerial task team on xenophobia. Maybe if they can be specific on that. And also to check if the Department of Home Affairs have any reliable indicator of the extent of undocumented migrants in the country. And then my last question, Chair, is to check if there are any specific initiatives by the Department of Home Affairs to improve the migrant cohesion into society. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ben.
Thank you very much. I would like to first add my voice in saying that we condemn the violence that has been directed to foreign nationals, which has resulted in the death of both South Africans and foreign nationals. There are three issues that I would want to raise. The first one is in terms of the statistics, because they only reflect a few countries of origin, whereas when you go on the ground, you would find that there are Nigerians, there are Congolese, there are Ugandans, there are Chinese, and there are a number of other that are not included in these statistics. I'm saying that because the Portfolio Committee on Small Business Development has been on the ground to actually interact with communities on these issues, and we came across foreign nationals that go beyond the ones that are reflected on the list. And I would urge that statistics actually include. The second issue is on the underlying causes. I would want to know whether the mandate of the committee was that the assessment should only assess the South African condition as the root cause and not look at what is happening in other countries that could be also part of the cause of the we actually see in South Africa. My reason for raising that is that if we confine the root causes to the situation in South Africa, we would only be dealing with the symptoms. And also we will only be saying it is only the South African government that is responsible for solving this problem. Whereas if we were to extend the underlying causes to include what is happening in other countries, because we have the Department of Corporate Government and International Relations as part of it, we would then look at what are the socio-economic conditions in those countries that actually relate to result with their citizens choosing South Africa over and above their own countries of origin. The third issue, that also relates to the issue of competition in terms of skills. Because when we look at the skills level of Chinese and Pakistani small businesses of Chinese origin, of China origin and the Pakistan, you then begin to see the uneven levels of development in terms of our small business and their small businesses. And if those issues are not addressed, we would then not be talking to the actual causes of the problem. The third issue that doesn't come in terms of the underlying causes, for me, is the impact of the establishment of rural malls and township malls with no co-ownership of people from townships and rural areas in those models, as well as the absence of value chain development to facilitate the situation where township people who have been running businesses are also participating in the established model, which then narrows the participation and competition of small businesses that have been operating in those areas. I want the teams to actually look into that and tell us whether they also look at what is the impact of this establishment of rural malls and township malls in terms of small business operation in those areas. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Rahul.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you very much for the presentation. And we are still saying that we condemn violence at all costs. My question is, on page 3, the recent spate of attack was sparked by a labor dispute over the employment of foreign nationals as quite this quite enough. So what kind of a store is this? Is this a furniture shop? Whatever. If we can just get clarity on that. And even to check whether it was referred to the Labor Department. And yesterday I was listening to our president where he really said that, you know, they did interview the foreign nationals. And the foreign nationals, when they were interviewed, they said that they love South Africa because South Africa is safe. And really, I was so humbled to hear such powerful, you know, encouraging words. South Africa is safe. In order that we must maintain that safety of our foreign nationals and even the South African, what other measurements can we employ as South Africa? I was speaking to the DG, saying that DG, how about designing a leaflet, you know, that can be able to talk to our communities about the legal, the illegal, and the records of that, of the you know, foreign nationals. The leaflets that can be in different languages, I think that can be, you know, so important, you know, to empower our communities out there. I just wanted to say that the South African Council of Churches in Soweto on Sunday, they also held a big community meeting in Grace Bible Church in Soweto. So if it also can reflect the, you know, South African Council of Churches, the president of the South African Council of Churches and all the, you know, people who are responsible in the church fraternity, they were also, you know, came, you know, in prayer to inform the communities about this xenophobia. I'm taking a bite on what my colleague has said on the issue of the Nigerians. Where are the Nigerians? Why can't we get, you know, how many Nigerians are we having here in South Africa? The Pakistanians. So can we really get that? Are they legal? Are they illegal? Because in every corner of the township, every household, there is a Pakistani. So where can we get that kind of information? And this plan that the people that you have given us, so when are you going to, you know, consolidate the conclusion of the plan? Because it's like it's ongoing, but we want to get the end of this plan. I thank you.
Honorable members, I have not seen any indication from Honorable Fichland. I'm sure you are covered. Honorable Breitenbach, you are right. Honorable Horn.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe just two issues. There's been a question already on the extent of undocumented migrants, but I think to be more exact, it would obviously help us understand the situation better if we can get the best estimate of the Department of Home Affairs and the police on the amount of illegal migrants present in South Africa. We know it's difficult to put an exact figure on it, but it's all helpful to know those documented migrants, the figures of, but obviously they might have a working figure in terms of illegal migrants. Then secondly, Jay, in terms of also the underlying root causes, I concur with the member who said that we must maybe broaden the scope to understand also why people from specifically Africa wants to come here and the conditions in their own countries. But it's also been said by spokespeople of government and the King himself that there might possibly also be third force activities in the peasants in this whole scenario. And as we have had flare-ups of this since 2008 now, the question is whether there is a really coherent investigation into this possibility, and if so, whether it's been dealt with. As it has been confirmed by Mr. Brian Dube also that in their view, this is one of the underlying factors. So if you can have some comment on that as well. Thank you, Jen.
Thank you very much, honorable members. And of course, as I'm sure from the security cluster, if there is information, then you can assist us with, of course, with what is happening in Hillbrow, then it is Sunnyside in Pretoria, then it is Point Road in Durban, then it is Port Elizabeth Central, and then also around Belleville in Cape Town. If there is any information that can be shared as well, Honorable Deputy Minister.
Thank you very much, Chair, and I'm going to
Just
deal with some of the broader questions that members have posed, and I will leave it to the DG, Ms. Modere, and the Major General to respond to specific questions on the presentation. Firstly, let me begin by aligning myself with those members who have firstly condemned the violence and secondly extended their condolences to the families of people who have lost their lives, both South Africans as well as non-nationals. And I think we must begin by speaking about what many members have spoken about as the cause. You see, I've always believed, and I hold dear to the idea, that unless you identify the mischief, you're not able to resolve it. And so it's very important that we understand when we say what is the cause, that we identify the real cause. And I hope that when we say that the root cause of the xenophobic attacks is that the inspectorate is under-resourced and that we have illegal migrants in the country, that we're not saying that this is why people resort to violence. I think we must be very clear as leaders that violence is unacceptable under any circumstance, no matter what the reason is. That we as leaders will not tolerate violence being unleashed against people, whether they're illegal or illegal. And this is exactly where the problem with the rationality comes about if we say that it's because they are illegals. There's violence in the country because when people are attacked, nobody knows their status. It is only Home Affairs, police and other officials who will be able to determine an individual's status. And so we must stand together as leaders and absolutely in one voice condemn this resorting to violence to solve our problems. Whether it's illegal migration, whether it's business competition, or for that matter, when we're sitting in the streets and protesting lack of service delivery and then we burn clinics and we burn schools and we prevent our kids from going to school because we want a road, that must be condemned. And so the cause is this very easy resort to violence in our community. And it's very important, and I think this is perhaps where the presentation should have also been differently crafted, to actually express to members the seriousness with which our law enforcement agencies are actually dealing with this issue, amongst others. I think we need to know, the President, when he met with the stakeholders I mentioned earlier, both the representatives and leaders of foreign migrant communities, as well as the business, civic stakeholders, was at pains to say that perhaps in 2008, when this thing happened, we did not communicate what happened to perpetrators of the violence. And he then articulated the number of arrests that were made, the sentences, some very, very serious sentences, including life sentences, that were passed against some, that were ordered against some of these perpetrators. And I think that the presentation should have told us exactly how many arrests were made and convictions, if any, in the specialized courts and in other courts. And I think the faithful should do so. Because this is a very, very serious matter, and it is criminal in nature. And ours is to get to a point where our communities are able to resolve whatever differences through dialogues and through the mechanisms that they have available to them. Otherwise, we will become a lawless society. And I think this is the other thing that I think we need to stand fast on, and that is the upholding of the rule of law. We all have taken oaths as public office bearers to uphold the Constitution and everything that it stands for. The rule of law has to be adhered to, and it must be upheld by all of us. And oftentimes, Chair, it seems that certainly in our society, we don't seem to have a very, should we say, an adequate understanding of our immigration laws. Oftentimes, people employ people who should not be employed in our society. Many people would employ illegal migrants in their homes as domestic workers or as gardeners, etc. These people are not entitled to hold jobs in South Africa if they do not have work permits. The interesting thing, though, is that we have also found, I was reading the newspaper the other day, and there was a land invasion in the Western Cape, and there was a media report about what the judges had basically said, and some of the very crucial socio-economic issues arising from our constitution were touched on. But the single fundamental truth is that the people who invaded land, nobody knows whether they're legal or illegal in South Africa, because for some reason we seem to skip that step every time we do certain things. And it's important, and I've raised this with the police as well, that every time an arrest is made, that the person's status has to be determined as a matter of routine in the first instance, because there are consequences to whether to what happens to that person, assuming it's a criminal matter. If the person is convicted of that criminal matter, and we know that person's status is illegal in South Africa, well, that person will have to go to prison and serve their sentence, but thereafter get deported back to their country, as opposed to being released in South Africa. If that person is not convicted and found not guilty, well, the deportation happens at that point. So, and really the point that I'm making is that migration, and this is something we've been talking to in the last 2 weeks to various stakeholders, that migration in those countries that have successfully, or that have a very good migration management system, it's not just the business of one department in the state. It is the business of everyone. So in some countries, if a reservation is made in a hotel by a tourist, and that person doesn't turn up on the day that that reservation was made, there's a reporting to the authorities about this. Because all over the world, there's an abuse of the tourist visa. And South Africa is not the only country with illegal migrants. It isn't a country on this planet that doesn't have illegal people living and working there. And if we think that the solution is resources, and I agree, Matos, and I agree that we need more capacity in our inspectors, I do agree that systematically that will have to grow, and we'll need to make that investment. But don't for a minute think that that is the solution to all of our problems, because it isn't. The most resourced migration authority on the planet is that of the US, and they're unable to stem the tide of people flowing in from the south of their border. They have huge walls, they have technology, but the migration from the south is unprecedented in numbers. And so our problems cannot be solved merely. And I think that that is a concern for us. That is not something I want to be misunderstood of. The inspector's capacity has to increase, and I think the DG will speak more specifically to that question. But I just want to say that our problems are much larger than merely one of a lack of resource. What has happened in our country since 1994, and I keep saying this, and I want to say it one more time, that we receive new leaders, we receive new laws and new liberties, but we also had a love affair with the rest of the world. From being a pariah state, we became the apple of the world's eye. And we opened up. Prior to 1994, we didn't have a border management agency. We didn't have proper migration infrastructure because we were a police state. And our defense force operated along our borders. We had conscription, we had the manpower, the woman power. And they operated very often beyond our borders, as we know. And this effectively served to mitigate illegal migration. Mitigate, as they not eradicate. Some of us came in and out of the country illegally ourselves, despite the state machinery being directed in that way. You then had a secondary system with the commando system being deployed at the border, which also acted as a secondary mechanism to prevent illegal migration. So we went from swinging the pendulum from one extreme and then in 1994 opening up to the other extreme. And I was chairperson, you know more than anybody else, the efforts that we have been making to rectify that balance somewhere in the middle. It's not going to happen overnight. and certainly we met. And currently a member of what is happening in the meantime before the Border Management Agency can be realized, well, a lot of that again has been up to the Defence Force and the police acting together with various other role players. You may know that the Defence Force has been reassigned to the border to protect the borderline. I do not want to understate the task that lies ahead for the Border Management Agency, because at the moment a lot of focus and a lot of our capacity is focused at ports of entry and very little at the borderline, and certainly there needs to be a huge investment in that agency, but the details of that we can discuss later. I think the issue that Mr. Bjerkman raises around what is the long-term strategy in terms of integration of migrant communities into South Africa, I think this is a very important question, and it's one that would require, again, a great deal of leadership. Somebody mentioned peace structures. I think it was Mr. Bjerkman who mentioned peace structures that used to be there in our communities as we transitioned into a democracy. And I do think that we need to consider having these alternative dispute resolving mechanisms in our communities, available to our communities to keep the peace. I do think that those are necessary structures, and I do think that perhaps we should be thinking along those lines. I haven't given it much thought, but given that it was mentioned, I thought that was instinctively, I thought that was a good idea. We have been speaking, I've been particularly deployed to speak to the religious sector these last 2 weeks, and we have been communicating to them, firstly, the moral paucity that is behind some of these attacks, you know, people's shops getting looted, etc. Especially by young people. I find that most disturbing because many of these people have been born after 1994. And we seem to think that, you know, because people are born after 1994 and we've got a democratic state, that things will fall into place, but actually I think that there needs to be a whole lot of moral regeneration, a lot of value teaching, but particularly around issues such as the value of hard work. You know that you're not going to get rich just because you're going to steal 20 loaves of bread from somebody. Then small business, if you want to become an entrepreneur, it means sacrifice, it means hard work, it means dedication. And this notion that I'm going to get rich very quickly overnight must come to an end. Most people who seemingly are wealthy and well-to-do people are very hardworking. It took them years of hard work, of sacrifice, not owning that fancy car, that fancy clothes, not living with credit. But they got there through sheer grit and hard work, and these are the values that we need to teach our young people. The other thing that I thought would be very, very useful that we discussed with religious leaders are creating platforms for people to socialize and get to know one another. You know, we've come from a past where we must learn these lessons. We were separated. We didn't know each other, so what built up was mistrust, misunderstanding sometimes, and just sheer ill feeling towards the other. Now if we in our communities where we live still have places where only migrant communities live and they're self-sufficient in a sense, they don't really need to integrate. They don't speak the languages that our people speak. They don't go to the same churches. They don't drink, so many of them, in particular the Somali community, don't drink, so they don't go to Shabbat. So you don't get an opportunity to know each other. And when we as Home Affairs, particularly when we celebrate Refugee Day, and when we have these outreach events, very few of them, I must admit, because we don't have a budget and we don't really have a mandate around social cohesion. But when we do, we try and bring together South African communities and South African citizens together with their neighbors who happen to be migrants from other countries. And we try and bring them together in venues and create platforms where people can interact and socialize. And I do think that that helps a great deal. I always point to a particular example. About 2 years ago we were in Soweto and we were at the Regina Mundi Church, and we had, it was Women's Day in fact, and we had women who were South African who were all in their traditional wear, and we had their neighbors in essence, because I was insistent that we draw from the same community, people who were from other countries across Africa, and they came in their traditional way. When we walked into the hall, they were literally like sitting in the old assembly chamber, the South Africans were on one side and the foreign national communities were on the other side. And we began the discussion by saying to them, we are not here to give you speeches, we'd like to hear about you, tell us about your outfits. Tell us why you wear the beads. Tell us why you wear the length of skirt. What does it mean? And people started talking about their traditional clothes that they were wearing and explaining the significance. And suddenly, the room was animated. And we ended up talking about the type of food we traditionally eat, the kind of dances we perform, and we ended up dancing all together. At the end of that event, you couldn't tell who was South African and who wasn't, because people were sitting amongst each other, sharing numbers and so on. And these are the kinds of initiatives I think that we need to start creating, whether in our churches, whether in our stock sales. Instead of having a cake sale in your church to raise funds, why not have an Africa Day where people can bring their food and sell their traditional food so that we can, all of us, be richer for the experience. So these are some of the things that we have shared. The other very interesting idea, Mr. Beckman, was about the local languages. And these came from refugee communities that I interacted with last week, where somebody stood up and said, you know, I'm absolutely embarrassed. I've been in this country for 15 years. I'm a refugee, but I don't know the language most spoken in the township. I know English, but I don't know the other language. And can't government develop centers in each province, and the predominant language of that province is taught free of charge to anybody and everybody. And I thought that this would be not just a good idea to integrate foreign nationals, but also South Africans, because many of us don't know each other's languages either. So these are some of the ideas that were being discussed last week amongst these communities, and I did think that it was very, very important that some of these initiatives, as members of parliament who have constituency offices and so on, that we provide these platforms and the leadership that is required. Finally, let me just speak about a big area that we have to deal with, and as part of our strategies is one of the things that I think we need to consider. You know, Chairperson, in 2009-2010, the number of asylum seekers we received was over 200,000 per annum. What we have done since then is we have tried to make more efficient the processing system. So new applications are dealt with much more speedily than they were previously. And so we have reached the stage now that we are able to process new asylum applications within 3 months. And what is, for those members who don't know, asylum seekers are people who merely apply for refugee status. And we have to issue work permits and sojourning permits and study permits to those people while they await the outcome of their application. This has resulted in opportunistic use of our asylum centers. And in particular, we find that the majority of people who apply for asylum are indeed not refugees and are really needing a work permit. As part of the new immigration policy, one of the things that we are going to be discussing through the white paper that will be produced hopefully by the end of this financial year is the issue of quota permits for our study country, so that we regulate that kind of migration. At the moment, work permits are very difficult to acquire in South Africa for obvious reasons, because we have a huge number of unemployed, unskilled people in our country. And so the kind of skills that we require are of the nature that very few people have on the continent. And so the migration of unskilled work into South Africa happens in an illegal in an undocumented way, unless that individual comes to the asylum center and applies for asylum. Of course, what has now happened is that given our efficiencies, the new applications have reduced to around 70,000 per annum. A significant reduction in just a period of 4 or 5 years. And what that means is that even if such individuals were to receive that work permit, within 3 months that work permit is expired, and mostly people are rejected through that system. We will need to address this both in terms of the quota permits that I mentioned, but also by looking at offering basic shelter and basic food, clothing and other necessities to genuine asylum seekers, as opposed to issuing work visas out of our asylum seeker center. The actual number of refugees is a very, very small percentage of the numbers that apply for that status. We've seen percentage-wise it's growing from about 5% to about 10% now, but that is actually a good sign, because it means that people who are in need of that assistance are actually now able to access it. And so we hope that as we refine our policies around this, and of course it would mean that we would need more resources. You can't have a protection system without that kind of investment. So I believe that a two-pronged process is going to be required for us to deal with it. And then, of course, we as South Africans, all of us, have to come to terms with the fact that migration affects all of us, and that an effective migration system has to concern each and every one of us, over and above the investment that we require for our infrastructure capacity. Because it doesn't help that you have the capacity for inspectors, but South Africans are sheltering illegal people in their homes as well. So it is going to be an effort, which is a national effort, that has to concern every sector of society, whether it's business, whether it's individuals, and I believe we will get there. Chair, so those are some of the things that I wanted to say about the course and also where I think our solutions lie, broadly speaking. I want to hand over to DG, to Mr. Modire, and then to the Major General as well to respond to specific questions.
Yeah, I think we can afford it some time because we're just about to break for Tinko. Because it has been a very long time. You can take us, DJ, if you.
I will try to be brief, Chairman, members. Firstly, we really appreciate the questions because they do firm up our challenges which we have, so that at the end of the day, we come up with solutions which will be addressing the problems which are there. As I'm not going to go through questions by question, I'll just try and consolidate them up. And so there is a saying that prevention is better than cure. We're saying as a Department of Home Affairs that the way the department is funded is that cure is better than prevention. Home Affairs has got currently about 10,000 staff members, 10,000, of which 700 of those are inspectorate. And we are dealing with 52 million people, those that from the cradle up to the death, but any foreign nationals in country. But if you can compare us with police has got about 200,000 members, as against Home Affairs, it's at 10,000. City of London has got about 2,600 inspectors a city, but the country has got 700. And the Honourable knows that during our budget process, we will be putting this guy as a department. But unfortunately, we don't fund ourselves. We are funded somewhere, but we put our case. So let me just deal with the issues. What are we doing? So you will know that recently as a department, we came up with a variety of changes in our immigration laws. Exactly to keep this, but they were not understood. One of those who said we want people to apply in person before they come to our country, for us to be able to take fingerprints and the photos. We said well, before the kids travel, whether in or out, they must have an average birth certificate so that we make sure that we know who's coming into our country. Here there was an outcry when we said, if you are an overstayer, which we are talking about, we are no longer interested in your money, we will declare you undesirable. There was an outcry. And because all these things are trying to make sure that because immigration has got what we call a push and a push factors. Once we've got push factors, then we're going to have an influx. So you need to balance between those. Also, sir, we are busy now implementing, which is in our strat plan, when we met with the committee, that I will be implementing fingerprints system at our ports of entry, so we know exactly who is in our country. The MS touched on the issue of the establishment of the PMA. The PMA is going to be responsible for ports of entry as well as the borderline, as a vision approved by the cabinet. So that we make sure that our borders are not porous. Because you can tighten your laws, but if your borders are porous, then you are not going to resolve the situation. So that's what we are going to say. What are we doing in the borders? But what the cabinet approved was to say, yes, BMA will be in existence in 2 years' time. But between now and then, we need to come up with a pilot projects which we implement as we're going forward. So there will be the minister during his budget speech will be announcing what we'll be doing around the borders in the interim. But already the president did announce that defense has deployed now and defense force around our borders. So the issue of illegal immigration, I think by its definition, it says illegal. If we knew about it, the number, we won't call it illegal. But the mere fact that we're saying it is illegal, because we don't know the number. But what is important is to say, what are these processes which are taking place to try and deal with that issue? Then, the issue of what is the long term, I think James touched on that. We are on, ministers already have about four round tables, and we are preparing them to have a colloquium, where we are inviting the whole society to say to Home Affairs, what are the challenges on the ground? What are the policy perspectives you are thinking we need to put in place? So that in totality of South Africa, we can look at the whole paradigm shift on our issue of international migration. So it's what we'll be dealing with. So I think there was a point which was raised clearly by Honorable Benko. I think it's a point which was saying that South Africa is part of the communities of the world. And therefore, our borders, as DM was saying, we can't fight it by a closed door. Not possible. But what we need to do is to understand the environment which we are in. We've got SADC, we've got the continent, we've got the rest of the world. So we need to come up with the policies which will respond on those. Hence, we're saying that in South Africa currently, there's an abuse in our asylum seekers because the immigration laws which we have are more on the skilled side of immigrants when you talk about permits. But your low skill, we don't have that. Hence now in the proposal, I want to look at the economic migrants, which is said we must deal with it. It's a reality. People who look at it and say, if I'm on this country, I think the opportunities on the other side, whether there is a borderline, whether there is a fence, well, I will cross to the other side. But what we need to do is to come up with a regulatory framework to deal with that. So that policy will deal with those issues. I'm sure that the ministers will not deal with the issues of the small business, but get together, we are working, but the minister will deal with that issue. Well, the issue of how many have taken an offer, it's very few. I mean, there were, I think the Honorable Raput said, people said, no, I don't want to go back to my country. They said, so the national TV said, I want to remain in South Africa. So the number is only 2,700, it's on the slide. The rest doesn't want to go back. They want to stay in South Africa. But what we need to do is to make sure that people are in our country legally. I think we took that proposal of a pamphlet in order for us to educate our people, so we deal with that. So there are those practical things which we are implementing as a department, and as well we are working as a cluster, as we said, JCPS cluster, we are working together, the report is coming, but it's for all of us. But then we are saying as Home Affairs, for socials, we need to look at them so that the department must have a capacity to deal with these matters. So if just to deal with this issue of why other foreign nationals are not on the list.
It is really, I think, a technical matter. And I would have loved them for us to give them some 10 minutes when they come back from tea. Just to deal with the technical matter. And then they should not actually involve in political responses. And I would have loved us then to take some 15 minutes for tea, so that those that are pressed up, that they are able to have that time to react. Can we just have only 15 minutes? Just a second. Well, okay. Let's hear that.
Thank you.
Just before we go to tea, let's just give you some 3 or 5 minutes.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The issue that was raised, I believe, was whether there were with other nationals, your Somalis, Bangladeshi, Nigerians, why they're not mentioned. On the report, we are reflecting on the nationals that we're dealing with at the displaced shelters, and it is in Malawi, it's mostly
from the SADC, but in particular Malawians, Zimbabweans, and the Mozambicans. We have not as yet done any documentation of Nigerians or the other nationals that were mentioned in the question. The main nationals that have been the ones that are reflected in the statistics. So these are the people that have actually come forward, some of them have interviewed allies with the embassies that are based on the ground in terms of the arrangements for transport and repatriation. Thank you.
General, do you have any technical managers to talk to?
The person I hear that I must be short and I will be. I can just say what the Deputy Minister has mentioned in terms of the arrests of 2008, and I think it's important. In 2008 there were 79 cases and 132 accused involved. Collectively they were sentenced 140 years. There was one life sentence. There was one person for 15 years and one person for 25 years. The average was 3 to 6 years. And then for robbery and housebreaking, it was up to 9 years, and for intimidation, up to 5 years. In terms of the convictions for this current incident, the last figure that I have, I think we made 309 arrests. I think it's a bit too soon to have or to expect that we will have convictions. What I know is that our detectives, the DPCI, the WOCs, is working closely with the Department of Justice, the NPA. They monitor all of the investigations, and certainly as we will start getting convictions, we will keep a tab on all of those figures. The lifespan of the committee, Chairperson, that will be dependent in terms of the situation. We will ensure that it's not destabilized. We will ensure that we implement all of our operations. We have a target date of the middle of May. But things can change. We can ensure total stabilization earlier than that. In terms of the continuation of the IMC migration committee, what we typically do is there will be a priority committee that will give effect to those taskings that we receive from the IMC, and that committee will meet depending on the nature of the taskings. Typically we meet on a weekly basis with all of those departments. We get the action plans, we analyze that, and we operationalize them. Whether we work hand in hand with the IMC, definitely. We get our marching orders every week from the respective ministers in terms of that. So there is, we have meetings with them where we give feedback and also that we get guidance. The question on the Boyson Station Commander, the meeting outcome, we do not necessarily follow up in terms of the feedback on that, but Brigadier Willifon here behind me, she's specifically dealing with social crime prevention issues, and certainly we can do follow-ups in terms of what the results would be on certain aspects. I think Mr. Matthews have indicated why we only included certain nationalities that had to do with the repatriation. We are able to receive analysis from the respective hotspots in terms of those nationalities, typically within the communities. And we also have complainants that would be from Bangladesh, Burundi, Ethiopia, Ghana, Lesotho, Malawi. So it's not necessarily limited to those. The only reason was because we focused on the repatriation numbers. Chairperson, then in terms of the leaflet, yes, we've taken note of that. Certainly we'll look at that. I could just mention that the no calls to the call center, that was just a 24-hour period. So in that 24-hour period, there was no specific calls, but we do receive calls. We will go more public in terms of the toll-free numbers, and we hold the statistics in terms of that. Then in terms of the operations in Point, Sunnyside, Hillbrow, Belleville, there's definitely actions planned. We already had some operations in the areas, and they are part of us, so we will continue in terms of our multidisciplinary operations in the area. Then in terms of the underlying causes, we've taken note in terms of further analysis that we do not only look at the symptoms, and certainly that's part of the mandate of the IMC, and there will be a full analysis in terms of the reasons. The
estimate of illegals from SAPS, we will not venture into that to go and do estimation on number of illegals. And in terms of any link between land invasion and these attacks on foreigners, there's no specific links that we have. Also, similar to the investigation of the Third Force, obviously the intelligence community, the detectives and hawks, they are looking in terms of the many cases of incitement to violence. At this stage, preliminary, it looks like criminality, but certainly we will keep on following up and investigating. Jefferson, thank you. That's my contribution.
Do you have any closing remarks, please?
No, thank you. I think that's been the presentation up to now. And I agree that the message that has come out very clear is that we condemn this violence to ourselves as well as to the foreign nationals. And also the message that has come out clear is that the issues of migration affect all of us in this country. And we have to really wake up for them and attend to them correctly. And also, of course, it's that South Africans must just continue to adhere to their values of being humane and caring and accommodative. We need to continue to do that. And also, of course, is that there is support for the intervention that government is taking at the moment to actually deal with this problems, and of course is that we must look at the root causes both internally and externally as they actually increase cause and affect this country in terms of this action that we are trying to deal with. I think these are some of the messages that have come out, and also of course we have heard that the Department of Home Affairs is ready to win a lot to try and make sure that the regime that governs immigration and refugees, that it is actually done effectively to actually mitigate some of the problems that we may be having. But it's all of us, as citizens of this country, that we must put our hands together for all these regimes that we have to be successful. I think in the short summary, that is what has come out. And honorable members and our guests, let's have some drinks, comfort break, just for 50 minutes. Let's try and be back at 12:15 so that we receive comprehensive briefings for the small business. As it is, as the crosshairs of all this, that's the benefit. Thank you very much. 12:15, we should be back.